trust is at an all-time low for leadership right now. So why is it then that 90% of all leaders are still clinging to some form of the outdated command and control style of leadership? The need to adapt and rebuild trust is critical, and our guest today is on a mission to do just that by helping leaders change and lead organizations in a way that will bring out the best in their people. We are thrilled to welcome Stephen M. R. Covey. Stephen is the New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestselling author of Speed of Trust and now Trust and Inspire. As the former president of Covey Leadership Center, he grew it into the largest learning development company in the world. Stephen has also been recognized with a Lifetime Achievement Award as a top thought leader in the world on trust by Trust Across America. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show that helps today's leaders get ahead of the game. We believe that great leaders aren't born or made, they're constantly in the making. I'm Damon Lemby, and joining me as my co-host today is Darren Bridget, and we're both from Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. And we are so excited to share this episode with you. You're gonna love the stories that Stephen has, and we get into some great topics like how do you shift from a command and control style of leadership to more of a trust and inspire. Stephen's gonna share with you some secrets on how to unlock the potential and really bring out the best in your people. So let's dive into this amazing conversation with Mr. Stephen M. R. Covey.
All right, thank you, Darren, Damon. I'm excited to be with you guys. Learn It All podcast. I love the name, love the idea, love the episodes I've heard so far and seen. So really honored to be here with you.
Well, you stole the words right out of my mouth. I'm honored to have you. Darren and I are honored to have you today. I got my copy of your book right here. Can everybody see that? Hopefully. There we go. So we're going to get into all the stories and everything, but just want to kick it off with, you know, I've heard you say that a lot of leaders and organizations know that command and control is not the way to go, but yet I think you believe that 90% of organizations are still operating that way. So Stephen, why is that?
I know it seems like, because we've been talking about this for the last decade plus, maybe 2 decades, the need to kind of shift the way we lead, and the old model, the authoritarian, hierarchical, top down, you know, I call it command and control, it doesn't work very well. But I think one reason why it's so hard is that we're living in a command and control world. And we don't even know. We're like the French proverb, fish discover water last. You know, they're so immersed in it, they're not even aware that they're in it. And I think that is a similar thing, that we're just so immersed in a command and control world, we don't even think about it. It's in our language. You know, hierarchies and the way that we language things. It's in our structures. It's in our systems. It's in our processes. You know, we've got command and control management practices that are just embedded. Things like, you know, the high potentials inside of a company. Well, what kind of message is that sending to everybody else that's not on that list? And, you know, and so that it's just, we're embedded in it. We're not even aware of it sometimes. So we're in the command and control world, but also it's kind of like an old paradigm that can live on almost indefinitely. I liken it to bloodletting. You think about it, bloodletting goes back 3,000 years. Started with the Egyptians and moved to the Romans, and then it persisted on until even in the 1600s, it was still as practiced, even practiced up until 1800s. But in the 1600s, it was disproven that bloodletting doesn't work, that the disease is not in the blood. So it was disproven scientifically. And yet, in practice, it persisted for another couple hundred years. Even with George Washington, they did bloodletting before it passed away.
That's right. Bring out the leeches.
Bring out the leeches. The fact that a new paradigm has been established doesn't mean the old paradigm doesn't live on. And I think command and control is like modern day bloodletting. It's just, we know better, and yet we're still doing it because the old paradigm dies hard. And so, you know, I like to say that to know and not to do is not to know. And so we kind of know that we need to move from command and control, but we're still, 9 out of 10 are still in some version of command and control. And we got to make that shift. And so we need models of trust and inspire leaders. We need mentors. We need a path forward of saying, yeah, we know what we need to move from, but are we as clear as what we need to move toward? And so I'm trying to name it, to describe it. It's not command and control, it's trust and inspire. And here's what it looks like. And here's who's doing it. And it can work. And it can work in your situation. And it's a better way to lead. That's the idea.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's not enough to just know a thing. That doesn't change anything. You have to really put a lot of work in to change, especially the cultural phenomena of something like command and control. And it starts by having a new label, right?
The quickest way to change your paradigm is to change your name or change your role. You know, you become a parent and suddenly overnight you're a dad or a mom. You get a new name, new role. You know, changes your whole world. Change your name, change your role. Leaders are stewards. New name, new role. And, you know, and trust and inspire. New name, new role of my role as a leader.
And Stephen, what I heard you say, and I agree with, is that you believe this could work for any type of organization. So it's not just set in like one industry or one vertical, but across the board, right?
Every organization can benefit from this. Even the military, which is where the command and control language comes from. And it's not that there's not a doctrine of command and a doctrine of control. It's just how we go about achieving it is different in this new world. Of new world of work. And in a military context, the enemy's different. And you got to be agile and fast and adaptive and responsive. And methodical command and control doesn't work very well. It's like General Stanley McChrystal, when he was the leader in Afghanistan, this was years ago, their mantra was this for their top people. They said, you know, they said this, here was their mantra. If when you get on the ground, the order we gave you was wrong, execute the order we should have given you. Talk about trust. You know, I mean, this is life and death situation. And they're saying, if when you're on the ground, we gave you the wrong order, do the order we should have given you. Use your judgment. Now, that wasn't given blindly to everyone, but it was given to the top elite fighters. And so even in the military, trust and inspire is a better style of leading that can still have appropriate command and control built in without it being a leadership style. And so everyone can benefit from trust and inspire. And I think it even works as parents and as neighbors and as friends. So just a better way to lead and to be with people.
It's incredible that even the military, which is like where command and control originated, is the head of business. But to help set the stage for everybody and give people a little bit of a better sense about your background, I wanted to talk about green and clean. So let me set it up a little bit. So you've written this terrific book that we're going to spend a lot of time talking about. But some people, I'm sure many people, are familiar with your father's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he tells the same story. So a bit a little of a Rashomon effect here, where the same story from two different perspectives. Can you share your perspective of this story? Tell us the story and then let us know why this was so important to you.
Absolutely. So this comes from my father's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People book. And it was kind of one of their favorite stories. It's kind of like if you go to a Paul McCartney concert, you want to hear Hey Jude. And if you went to my father's seminar, you wanted to hear the green and clean story. And that was his Hey Jude. he tells a story of how he was trying to teach his kids responsibility. And so I was a 7-year-old boy, and he was giving out some jobs around the home. He and my mom, and he said, okay, son, would you like to take care of the yard? And I volunteered. I said, okay, I'll do it. So then he trained me over a 2-week period of time around the responsibility of saying, look, I want the yard to be green and clean. And, you know, in, you know, Green, those are results words. They were outcomes, not methods, but outcomes. So he was delegating outcomes to me and then empowering me to do it. And this sounds easy today, but at the time, we didn't have automatic sprinklers. So you had to manually do it. And we had a big yard with three different sections that you had to go to three different places to do it. And we had to use hoses in some places with, you know, sprinkle with little hand sprinklers to get it going. And so it was a big job for a seven-year-old. So he trained me over 2 weeks. Here's what green looks like. Here's what clean looks like. And again, I'm seven. So I had to kind of learn this. And then he said, okay, I'm your helper. If you need help, if I have time, I'll help you, but it's your job. But what we're going to do is we're going to walk around every week and you can tell me how you're doing against the green and clean standard. You got it, son? Yeah, got it. So he turns it over to me and you know what? I did nothing. I did nothing. I just kind of, after 2 weeks of training, I didn't do a thing. It was a Saturday when he turned it over to me. It did nothing. Sunday, nothing. Monday, nothing. Tuesday, nothing. Wednesday, now. So this has been 5 days. It's scorching hot, the middle of the summer. And the sun is just turning the yard more and more yellow by the hour, let alone the day. I mean, it was so hot. And then we had a big neighborhood barbecue over the weekend. And so there's all this garbage that's just strewn throughout. It's anything but green and clean. And my dad was, he was just tempted to just maybe just give up on this and just think, you know, he's too young. He's not ready for this yet. Just take the job back or go into command and control and start to say, hey, son, I told you green and clean. Now get over there and turn that on and start to direct me. And, but he didn't do it. He stayed with it because he realized that his purpose was, he cared less about the yard being green and clean as much as he wanted to help raise the kid, help raise the child. So he what he did is he went to the back to the agreement and he said, hey, we said that we'd walk around every week. You tell me how it's going. So let's go ahead and do that. And as we began to walk around, I realized this is not green and it's not clean. And I knew it. I could see it. And I knew I'd done nothing. And I kind of broke down and I cried. And I said, Dad, this is so hard. And he said, well, what's hard? You haven't done one single thing yet. But see, what was hard was me kind of learning to take responsibility, me owning this and being a self-starter and taking responsibility for it. And I said, well, Dad, will you help me? Because there's all this garbage everywhere. He said, what was our agreement? And I said, well, you told me you'd help me if you had time. That's right. Do you have time, Dad? I've got time, he said. So I went into the house and I came out and I grabbed two garbage sacks. I took one of them. Then I gave one to my dad and I said, hey, Dad, will you take the garbage sack? Would you go over and clean up that garbage around the barbecue? Because it makes me kind of want to vomit. But can you do that? He says, I'm your helper. I'll do whatever you want. Sure, I'll go do it for you. And it was at that moment I realized, this is my job. I own this. Look, I'm directing my dad. He's doing what I'm asking him to do. This is my responsibility. And suddenly just the light bulb went on that I'm responsible. I can do this and I can own this and I'm capable. And from that moment on, I took care of that yard and it was green and it was clean. Not only for that summer, but for another decade that followed. My dad never had to worry about it or ask about it again. And He treated me according to my potential, not my behavior. And I ultimately lived up to it. I saw myself differently. And the reason why this is significant is it really was the first imprint in my life of being a leader, being responsible, being capable, that it was in me. And my father believed in me, trusted me. He inspired me. And I wanted to live up to that trust. And I ultimately did. And I became responsible and took care of that yard. And I did not want to let my dad down. And it was green and it was clean. And that became my first imprint around leadership. It's about bringing out what's inside of people, unleashing their potential, their greatness, helping them see themselves differently. And it's a great illustration. And I had I was blessed with with parents that were trust and inspire parents. And both my mom was equal. And the Green and Clean story is kind of a trust and inspire story, the first impression in my life around leadership. And I remember it distinctly to this day. So that's kind of a paradigm of where this trust and inspire originated. I experienced it as a young 7-year-old boy.
Stephen, it's an amazing story. And as a father of a 7-year-old myself, I have a 7-year-old daughter, Lucy. I can't wait to go home and try this on her, you know, because I think it's important, as you mentioned, you know, for this works for parents as well, and to raise children to believe in themselves and build the confidence, which is so critical. And you came from such a wonderful family, and I've heard you talk a little bit about your family dinners and how that impacted you as well. And all this kind of led you to not wanting to let your father down, right? And because of all he's done for you. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think that I didn't want to let my dad down, because someone asked me the other day, "Now, why would you agree to take on that job as a 7-year-old? And my answer was, you know, I don't know, other than I loved my dad and I didn't want to let him down. And that's one thing about being trusted. See, even at 7, I felt trusted. And there's a power to being trusted. We tend to want to live up to the trust being given. It inspires us. We want to be worthy of it. Now, I acknowledge that there might be a few people that try to take advantage when they're trusted. But the vast majority of us just actually want to do our very best work. We're inspired by being trusted, and we rise to the occasion. We perform better. That's what it was for me. Is I loved my dad. I felt trusted by my dad. I actually felt inspired by him. I wouldn't describe it in those words back then, but it's what it was. Because he cared so much about me, and I felt that. It inspired me. And so I wanted to live up to the trust being given. And I wanted to kind of show that I could do it. He believed in me, and I began to believe in myself. And in fact, my father always described leadership in the simplest of terms this way, where he would say, leadership is communicating people's worth and potential so clearly that they come to see it in themselves. And that's what he did.
Which is so powerful, because there's so many people out there, you know, for our listeners out there, your leaders, and you have these individuals, they could be any age, but let's just take somebody who's 26, 27, and they don't see some of the accomplishments they have or really understand the greatness that they have inside of them. And it's my dad was similar. You know, he put all this trust in me and gave me opportunities, and I just didn't want to let him down or my mom, you know, because I wanted to give back. So, and it's so true that I think that great leaders are ones who can extract that from individuals and give them an opportunity to learn and grow and try. Now, getting to your book, you already had a great book, Speed of Trust. So what inspired you? Because this story took place back when you're 7 years old. So why now in 2022 did you come out with Trust and Inspire?
Yeah, just I'd actually been working on it since 2005. I had it in my mind. It just kind of evolved, and I didn't use the words command and control, trust, inspire back then, but I had this ongoing contrast between how leadership practice was, which was more traditional management, versus what it needed to evolve to, move to. And over time, it became command and control, trust, and inspire. So I'd been thinking about it for a long time. I will say this, that I was working on this even before the pandemic, but the pandemic kind of accelerated everything as well, because suddenly there's remote work, hybrid work, intentionally flexible work. And then all these younger generations, we've always had generations at work, but the differences in the generations today of how people want to be managed and led and engaged, especially the younger generations, you know, Gen Z, this upcoming Generation Alpha, just a completely different expectation of how they want to be led and engaged and such. And then all the change that's hitting us, just the pace of change, the amount of change, the type of change, disruption, you know, technology, and now generative AI and all this change hitting us. It all just says, it screams that we've got to be fast and flexible and adaptive. We've got to collaborate and innovate. We've got to learn it all. We can't know it all, right? There's too much to know. Human knowledge doubles every 12 hours. So we've got to learn it all. You know, I love the whole premise. We've got to be a great learner. And we've got to learn and relearn how we lead in a new world of work. And so it all kind of came together, but I'd really been working on it for a 20-year period. And then it was accelerated coming out of the pandemic. That a new world of work requires a new way to lead. And I just felt more compelled that there'd been a lot of discussion of what we need to move from. And I called it command and control. Others might call it something else, hierarchical, top-down, traditional management. And I felt like we had to name and describe and give models and examples of what we needed to move toward. And that need was more greater than ever before because we're still trapped in a command and control world. So we need models and mentors of trust and inspire and a new way to lead. And it became more and more clear. One last little point on that. And this is why I started in 2005. At the time, my father and I, we were invited to give a whole series of seminars together. I was just coming out with Speed of Trust, and he had just come out with his follow-on book to the 7 Habits, the 8th Habit. And so we did these workshops, day-long events all around the world, in 50-plus cities. And my dad would take 3/4 of the day, and I'd take the last 4. And he'd talk about, he'd ask 2 questions at the start of every one of these sessions of the audience. And this would be filled with, there might be 1,000 people in the room. And they'd be some high-level leaders to senior leaders to mid-level managers, and every industry. And he would ask this. He'd say, how many of you believe that the vast majority of your workforce has more creativity, ingenuity, capacity, ability, than their current job requires or even allows them to contribute? And almost every hand would go up. In other words, there's more inside of people in our organizations than we're getting out of them by far. There's a lot more they can have to give. And yet, then he asked a second question. And how many of you are under intense pressure to do more with less? And again, almost every hand would go up. So you just juxtapose that. Here we're under all this relentless pressure. We got to get more done with less resources. And yet we're not even tapping anywhere near into what people have inside of them, into the talent and expertise. And I said to myself, that's a leadership problem. That's a leadership issue. We're not bringing it out of people. And we've got to lead better. And that's where this contrast of what we are doing and where we need to move toward started to emerge. We need to move from command and control to trust, inspire, and bring out that potential that's inside of people. It was Gandhi who said, the difference between what we are doing and what we are capable of doing would solve most of the world's problems. That's a leadership opportunity to bring out what we are capable of doing. And then we can solve our problems. So that's the idea. And it was when I was doing these seminars with my dad, that's where the seed was planted. And then I said, aha, and I've experienced the kind of leadership that we need when I was 7 with Green and Clean.
Well, it's funny because with Green and Clean, what really struck me in the story when I read it again, and this is for our listeners, when you get to read it, it's in the book, it's told brilliantly, is the way that your father responded to, like, giving you the trust and inspiration. I remember trying it, Damon, on my teenager, thinking like, oh, I'm really doing this great. And then he didn't follow through. It's like, and then you're, okay, what do I do? Like, I did the trust and inspire part, but how do I handle a lack of accountability here? And your father did it in such a smart way because he'd already baked in a moment to check. And then he didn't get mad. He actually asked you, how are you doing? And he also had that baked in the way to help you. So it's trust and inspire plus specific how-to recommendations. And in your book, you have these with the stewardships and the five beliefs, for example. Can you talk us through some of your ideas that can help all of us level up to like your dad in that moment?
Yes, absolutely, Darren. It's a great observation, because why this worked is because my father with me built an agreement around the trust being given. Now, look, I'm seven. I didn't sign any agreement, but he built it socially around, here's the responsibility I'm giving you. And the agreement had two halves to it. The first half was clear expectations around the trust being given, and that included the outcomes, which was green and clean. Those are results oriented. And then some basic guidelines. And one of the guidelines, I didn't mention this, but one of the guidelines was you can't paint the lawn. In other words, I can't shortcut and just paint the lawn green. I got to get real green. You know, so guidelines are kind of parameters, you know, that we operate within. And then resources, which in this case was, if I've got time, I'm your helper. So whenever we empower someone, whenever we're extending trust to someone, the first thing we need to do is make sure together we build an agreement around expectations, desired results, guidelines, resources to work with. And make sure the focus is on outcomes, not methods. He didn't tell me how I had to get the job. He said, you can do whatever you want. You could use hoses or buckets or spit all day long. But all I care about it is that it's green and clean. Now, he said, if I were you, I'd turn on the sprinklers, but you can do it however you want. So he delegated outcomes, not methods. And when you do that with people, they'll be more creative and maybe they come up with something that you never would have thought of. And, you know, maybe they're more creative, innovative. So that's the first half, clarify expectations. The second half of the agreement is agree to a process of accountability around those expectations. And in this case, it was, let's walk the yard every week. You tell me how we're doing against the expectation of green and clean. You judge yourself against the green and clean standard. But it was built in that I would report on how I'm doing. And therefore, because we built an agreement together, there still was control in this. He didn't lose control. The control just shifted from him being a micromanager, having to hover over me, to instead, the control was built into the agreement. And all he had to do was go back to the agreement and say, now, what was the agreement that you tell me every week how you're doing? And so that was a natural thing. And so that's the whole key to really extending trust today with people. Because people are afraid to lose control. They're afraid it won't work. And they're going to be held responsible. So they tend to micromanage. You know, that's command and control. Because they want to get it right and they don't want to lose control. If you build the agreement with the person, with expectations and accountability, the odds of them doing what they're asked to do go up. They'll do it better. There's research that shows maybe three times better when they're trusted. And you've not lost control. It's just built into the agreement instead of micromanagement. And you also now grow the person. And so there's so many benefits. It's better for the business, better for the people. And so that's the whole key, is a really practical way of extending trust with an agreement. Now, command and control just dictates the agreement to the other. Trust and inspire builds the agreement with them. You do it together. It's a little bit of a back and forth. So Damon, when you, with Lucy, if you do an agreement, you know, my dad spent 2 weeks building the agreement. It was a process of expectations, accountability, together with me. He didn't tell me what to do. We literally kind of built this together. He directed it. He had vision for it. But that's the whole key, is that if you feel like there's ownership in the agreement, I helped build it, then I really take responsibility for it. So that's one practical way. I call this a stewardship agreement around the trust being given. So that's a long answer, you know, Darren, to I'll come back to the, I'd like to come back to the fundamental beliefs in a minute, but I wanted to just highlight the power of trusting. Because, you know, it's one thing when it's a seven-year-old taking care of the yard. In our jobs, hey, if I trust someone, I got to get the results. And I'm saying you build the agreement with that person together, you'll get better results and you'll grow the person and they'll be happier.
That's that key, just to frame it back, is because in that moment, you could either go back to command and control because you're anxious and you can't control it, or you just kind of keep hoping it'll work out with like, well, I'll say it nicely and maybe they'll do it. You have a very specific, practical way to still be trust and inspire by creating this very smart agreement.
Yep, it's so. Smart trust, not blind trust.
Smart trust, there you go. Yeah.
No, and I love that. And Stephen, what I've seen over the years working at LearnIt is a lot of times you hire for potential and you build this agreement with the people that you're working with, and you help give them ownership over this. And they also know that they trust you to have their back if something doesn't go well. And with that, you really bring out the greatness in people. And I've heard, and in reading your book and seeing this, because what's the use of hiring these great people and then sticking them in a box, preventing them from learning and growing? A, especially with these younger generations, you're going to lose them. You know, you're going to lose them. And you just got to kind of give away that and lead them and just say, go for it, right? And let's see what happens and learn and go there. But to build that trust, what does it start with? I think you say it starts with trustworthiness, right?
Yes, it does. Yeah, but you know, to your point, Damon, you're exactly right. It's incongruent to hire great, talented people and then not trust them to do their work. It's just, something's wrong there. Now you might, I know that we've got to make sure they're ready and the like, but our starting point should be that we hire them because they're great, and then we give them the opportunity to do their thing. And that's our starting point until proven otherwise. And we try to calibrate it to the situation and the job, but you're exactly right. But, you know, we try to model this by going first. So it starts with our modeling. This is the first stewardship, modeling. That we model the behavior that we would like to see. That we model the values that we have and that we live. We have company values, we model those values. The idea of modeling is that we go first. Leaders go first. Someone needs to go first. Leaders go first. And they model the behavior they would like to see. If they want to see more respect, they model respect. They want to see more empathy, more understanding, they model empathy and understanding. They model the behavior they like to see. And the first thing, ultimately what we're modeling, if you think about it, modeling, that means that we are trustworthy. We have character, we have competence. Combined, character and competence is credibility. That's trustworthiness. And so we are a model of trustworthiness. And then we go from trustworthiness. So modeling is the first stewardship. The second stewardship then is trusting. Because here's what's interesting. You could have two trustworthy people working together, both trustworthy, and yet no trust between them, even though they're both trustworthy, if neither person is willing to extend trust to the other, to give it. So if the idea is that we want to build a high trust relationship, a high trust team, a high trust culture, to get that, yes, we have to be trustworthy. We earn that. But we as leaders especially have to also be trusting. We give that. And trust is both earned and given. And I find in that simple formula that trustworthiness times trusting equals trust. That the biggest gap in creating that trust is less on the trustworthiness side, although sometimes that's the issue. It's more often on the trusting side. And we're not trusting enough as leaders. So we got to go first by being trustworthy, but we also got to go first by by being trusting and giving that trust in a smart way, a smart trust. And so you start there, trustworthiness, modeling, extending the trust, trusting. And then the third stewardship is inspiring.
One of the, it reminds me of one of the quotes from your book, always assume positive intent. Whatever anybody says or does, assume positive intent, and you will be amazed at how your whole approach to a person or a problem becomes very different. It's so easy for us to jump to the opposite. And I think we can do it in even a way that it's that golden rule thing. It's like you apply your own experience, your own understanding, your sensibilities, and you judge somebody's behavior from that point of view, and you miss where they were really coming from because you didn't extend them that trust and that that charity. So it's such a key piece, right?
Absolutely. That we, our starting point is we start with trust until proven otherwise. We assume positive intent until proven otherwise. Just go much faster. I was with Daniel Greeter, the CEO at Hugo Boss, a big global fashion retailer. It's about a year ago. And, you know, Hugo Boss stores all over the world and big brand, big name. But Greeter came in a couple of years ago as a new CEO, comes in from the outside. He doesn't know anyone there. They don't know him. He's brand new. First week on the job, he's with his top 100 leaders. He gets together with them and he says, team, we have a choice. Then he framed the choice this way. He said, look, we're new to each other. I'm new to you. You're new to me. We don't know each other yet. Here's our choice. We can spend the next year getting to know each other, determining whether or not we can trust each other. We could do that. And if we do, I think we'll waste a year. Or we could start from day one, from today, and trust each other. Team, I want you to know something, he said. I choose the latter. I want you to know that I want you to know that I trust you. I trust you. I'm asking you, trust me back. It is through this trust that together we can create a new way of working together, a whole new culture, leading with trust. Now look, this is Germany. This is not the natural starting point to start with trust. It's more natural to start with suspicion. It's more cultural. But he says, I trust you. See, I assume positive intent. I trust you. And for him, he told me, this was smart. This was not a blind trust. It was a smart trust because we hire great people at Hugo Boss. We hire great talent, great character. So I start with trust until they prove I shouldn't. And by doing that, they rise to the occasion, they perform better, they want to live up to it, and they reciprocate and they return the trust right back. So they created a 5-year plan, their claim 5-set strategy, had all the metrics, growth, profit, market share, brand awareness. So at the time I was with him, he said, Stephen, we are 2 years into our 5-year plan, and yet we are achieving the metrics at year 4. Of the plan. We're 2 years ahead of schedule. We are moving at the speed of trust, and nothing is as fast as the speed of trust. But he went first. Someone needed to go first. Daniel went first. Leaders go first. They're the first in being trustworthy. They model. They're the first in being trusting. They trust. They're also the first in being inspiring. And you might say, well, inspiring, don't you have to be charismatic to inspire? No. They're different things. I know some people who are charismatic, but who are not inspiring. I know others who no one would describe as charismatic, but who are extraordinarily inspiring because of who they are, because of how they lead, how they connect, how they care, how they build a sense of belonging, how they connect people to purpose and to meaning and to contribution. Inspiring others is a learnable skill. Everyone can inspire. And that's a paradigm shift because we've often just conflated it with charisma. And so how do you inspire? You inspire when you model and go first. You inspire when you trust people. To be trusted is the most inspiring form of human motivation. And you inspire people when you connect with people through a sense of caring and belonging. And then when you connect people to purpose and connect people to meaning and contribution, that inspires. And we can get good at this as a leader. And that, I think, not only can we get good at this, I think it's a stewardship, a responsibility that we have to inspire those about us. And it's learnable. So learn it all. Let's learn how to inspire through a sense of caring and belonging, connecting with people, and through a sense of purpose and meaning and contribution. We can get good at this as leaders.
So, Stephen, let's say our listeners are out there and somebody is self-reflecting right now and they're saying, gosh, I'm a command and control leader. And then they hear you say that inspiring and building trust are learnable skills. And they're like, fantastic. But how do I go from leading a team for the last 5-6 years with command and control and make this shift? You know, people might think it's inauthentic if I just try to jump to it, you know, from A to Z. What advice do you have for those individuals who want to make that change?
Yeah. Great question, Damon. Because again, most of us kind of grew up in a command and control world. We might have a command and control in our leadership style. Again, the data shows about 9 out of 10 are kind of still operating there. So I think that to be authentic on this, I think you kind of might even acknowledge upfront with the team that saying, you know what? I want us to be effective as a team to get results, but I want to do it the right way that also grows the team, grows the people, builds trust along the way. And I want to try to shift the way I'm leading because I'm not my style. We're not our styles. We can shift our style. We can change. We're not programs. We're programmers. So let's write a new program that's going to be more relevant for the new world. We might even acknowledge the world's shifting so fast. I want to shift in the way that I'm leading to really tap into the talent that's in you. So it takes a lot of humility to do this, to acknowledge that maybe the way I've been doing it, maybe it worked in the past, but it might not work so much in the future going forward. And so it takes humility to acknowledge that. And then it takes courage, which I know you guys have talked about as a vital attribute today, to then act upon that, to say, so I'm going to shift. And I think you declare it. You might do it one-on-one. You might do it collectively as a team, maybe both, saying, you know what? I'm going to try to lead in a way that's more relevant for where we are today as an organization and the need to attract and retain talent and the need to bring out the best in people and the need to be responsive to the younger generations and the need to kind of shift with the times. And maybe command and control brought me here, but it may not get us there, to paraphrase Marshall Goldsmith. But I think Trust Inspire can do it. And I've learned about this. This is where I want to be. Help me do it, team. Help, I'm going to try. Help me. You ask for help. It's humility and courage. That's a paradoxical, powerful combination.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to ask you. It's okay to say, I want to do better. Help me.
I want to do better.
That's okay as a leader. It will be the thing that will help you springboard that change, which will take a long time because it's hard for people to shift how they know you.
Absolutely. But involve them in it. Bring, you know, say, help me, with me. And rather than that being seen as weak, I think that's strong. That humility, that vulnerability, that authenticity, that I'm a work in progress too, and I need to shift the way I've been leading. I've been successful in the past, but it's a new world. I need to lead in a new way. Help me. And I believe I can shift. And so involving them with it, being humble about it, being vulnerable, rather than that being seen as weakness, I think that's the greatest form of strength and of courage. And you're relatable to people. You're real. That's a leader I want to follow. Someone who's real and authentic and vulnerable and open. That builds trust with me. The leader, it was Dr. Leslie John, Harvard Business School. I just was with her. She said, here's the challenge for the leader. The question, do I reveal or do I conceal? And, you know, the idea is that maybe you conceal because you don't want to show weakness or vulnerability. You want to show that you're strong. But he says, the irony is that no, the leader that chooses to appropriately reveal that, hey, I'm learning too. I need to learn it all because I can't know it all. I can't. So I'm trying to learn, shift, grow, change, evolve, and help me get there. That leader that's open, vulnerable like that, they actually build trust far faster than the leader that says, I'm perfect. You can trust me because I know it all. Gosh, I don't relate to that leader. I do relate to the leader that says, I'm learning, growing. Help me. I need your help. But, here's where I want to go. And you still can have a vision. You still can be courageous and strong with, I have a vision, I have a direction. Help me get there. And that's powerful. And you have a roadmap and such. And so I try to, in the Trust Inspire book, I try to give people a framework and a language and a process of actually becoming a Trust Inspire leader. And involving people in the process, but also having a vision for how to do this and a framework. I model, I trust, I inspire. Three simple stewardships. They're simple, but they're not easy. So that's a good starting point. And there's strength in this. This is not weak leadership. It's actually the strongest form of leadership we can offer.
And Stephen, I think, for listeners out there, this is a great way to set yourself apart. I mean, we live in a post-trust world right now, where there's so much chaos and there's so much nonsense going on. And if you really want to attract and retain great talent, be an authentic leader. And I think along with that goes transparency as well. Vulnerability, humility, and being transparent is so critical because I think our teams and our employees feel like there's just not a lot of that in the world right now.
That's beautiful, Damon. Absolutely. They're not. They're seeking it. Transparency builds trust. And again, it's part of this vulnerability. It's part of openness. It's basically saying, I'm telling the truth in a way that people can verify for themselves, see for themselves. I'm open. I'm transparent. There's nothing to hide. There's no hidden agenda. It's an open agenda. And it's amazing how in a low trust world, being open, being transparent conveys trust, builds trust. At first, someone might be a little bit suspicious, saying, what's the agenda here? Because they're viewing it through the lens of distrust, which is where they're scripted in. But when you're transparent, it just suddenly builds a trust. That's what Daniel Greeter did. He was open and transparent. You don't know me. I don't know you. But I'm going to trust you. Trust me back. I talked to a couple of people there. They said this was stunning. That they just hadn't seen a leader like this that just was so open, so authentic, so vulnerable, but also that went first. I trust you, trust me back. Together through trust, we'll build a whole new culture, whole new way of working together. And they did it faster. You think that's taking forever. Well, you can't shortcut it, but you can sort of accelerate it by your language, declaring your intent, assuming positive intent, leading out by extending trust to people, telling people that you trust them and why you trust them. And you watch, you trust people, they tend to trust you back. You don't trust people, they tend to not trust you either. So you can accelerate this path by being declarative.
I was just going to say, I love how you say you could accelerate it, not shortcut it. And I think for everybody out there too, when Stephen's saying lead from the front, that also means, as a leader, you're always on. People are always looking at your emotions and your behaviors and everything you're doing. And that's leading by the front as well, because people are going to be looking at you. And so it's so important. And I want to be, cognizant of the time.
Let me ask this, David, before I know we need to close. Can I just add one more thing that
of course
would feel remiss if I didn't get in?
Hey, look, I got all the time in the world for this. This is awesome stuff.
Yeah, I don't want to go on too long for our listeners and viewers. I know that, if it's too long, that's a long form podcast. And I fell asleep in one of those myself when I was when I was being interviewed.
Hopefully not when you were driving. Oh yeah,
it wasn't when I was driving, but I did like a 3-hour one. And I said, I got bored with myself. So anyways, I will just say this, that even before modeling, where this all starts is with your paradigm, your fundamental beliefs of how I view people.
Well, that's what my question was anyways.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Go for it.
How I view people and how I view leadership. And so that a paradigm, you know, it comes from the Greek, paradigma. It's a mental map or model. The idea of a map is that the map describes the territory. So there's territory, the reality. The map is, the model is trying to describe the reality. But what if you had an inaccurate map of the territory? An incomplete map of the territory. So I think command and control is an incomplete and inaccurate map of people and of leadership. It's too limited. It's not expansive enough. And so it starts with, yeah, some people have greatness, the high potentials, but most don't. You got to control them. And people just care about money. So you just got to, so at the end of the day, they just care about money. You got to, you know, just motivate them. And there's only so much to go around. And, you know, hey, I'm the boss, I'm in charge. And until things shift with the systems and structures, we can't really do much about it. Kind of an outside-in approach. That's limited. That's a command and control paradigm. Here's a trust inspire. I five fundamental beliefs. I just name them. First, I believe that people have greatness inside of them. So if I buy that belief, my job as a leader is to unleash their potential, not control them. I see the greatness, the potential inside of people. They might not even see it, but I see it. And then I try to help communicate it so they see it, then develop it and unleash it. See, communicate, develop, unleash potential. That's my first belief. Second, I believe that people are whole people, meaning body, heart, mind, spirit, and they bring their whole self to work. So my job as a leader, if I buy that belief, is to inspire, not merely motivate. See, if people were just economic beings only, just a body, then motivation would be sufficient. Just pay them. You know, we're heavy carrot and stick, heavy rewards. Nothing wrong with that. We need rewards. We do have a body. We want to be paid and paid fairly. But we also have a heart. So we want to connect and to care and to belong. We have a mind. We want to grow and develop. We have a spirit. We want to contribute, make a difference, add value, add significance and meaning and purpose. So inspiration, which is internal, can take us to a whole new place that motivation alone will never reach. So how do I view people? As whole people with greatness inside of them. That's a more complete map. How do I view leadership? Third belief, I believe that there is enough for everyone. That's an abundance mentality, not a scarcity mindset. So if I buy that belief, my job as a leader is to elevate caring above competing. Yes, let's compete in the marketplace. Let's care and collaborate in the workplace. Fourth, I believe that leadership is stewardship. It's about responsibility, not rights, insolence, not position. So if I buy that belief, my job as a leader is to put service above self-interest. And ironically, in the process, self-interest is typically served. And finally, the last one, number five, I believe that enduring influence is created from the inside out, not outside in. So if I buy that belief, my job as a leader is to go first. Someone needs to go first. Leaders go first. If I take those five beliefs collectively, I believe they represent a more complete, a more expansive paradigm of people and of leadership that a command and control paradigm doesn't come close to approximating. And I think starting with that paradigm, that mindset, and naturally I go into the stewardships of modeling, trusting, and inspiring, because of how I see people and how I see leadership. So that's a big part of the book as well that I put up front.
Love it. That's my takeaway right there. And all that you said so beautifully, it's in the book. It's, you expand on it and give so much value and context and all the great stories about these beliefs and the stewardships. And it's all pointed towards, like you said, changing the paradigm. You know, it's like the maps they used to see when they first started traveling, you know, getting into the new world. It's like, we need a new map. The old map, command and control, that got us here, it's not going to get us where we want to go. The key is trust and inspire is the paradigm shift. You change the label. And what you're working towards is smart trust, which is part of what we want to like build into it. And it's also learnable. This is the big key thing here. Trust and inspire These are learnable traits. That old idea you have in your head, talk about bad maps of what a charismatic, inspirational leader is like. That's not quite it. There are very specific ways to do this. And a great way for our listeners to start is to go ahead and get the book, Trust and Inspire, because it's right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Darren. And Damon, I feel like I cut you off on your question.
No.
It was going in that direction, right?
No, I wanted to make sure we got to the five beliefs. That was exactly, there was no way I wanted it to end without being able to get that. So you just beat me to the punch, Stephen.
Okay, that's beautiful. Yeah, because the quickest way to change your, behavior is to, start with a paradigm shift, See the world differently. And so get an accurate paradigm.
Get a more complete paradigm of people and of leadership. That's trust and inspire. That starts there. Then naturally the behavior follows from that. We get into those stewardships to model, to trust, to inspire.
Yeah. Well, before I ask you where everybody connect with you, do you have anything else you want to leave the audience with?
Maybe two things. First, I admire you too and the work that you're doing. And Learn It All.
Thank you.
Learn It All podcast. You love the paradigm because we can't know it all. Too much to know. We've got to constantly learn, recreate. And so Learn It All, it fits beautifully with Trust and Inspire. I'm saying shifting, changing world requires a new way to lead. So let's learn. Let's learn. Come, we're not programmers. We're programmers. Let's re-script around a new model of leading. And we'll move away from the old one that we've been entrenched into a new one, trust and inspire. Whether you use my words or someone else's, whatever works for people, it's just saying we've got to shift the way we lead. We've got to learn a new way, learn it all. So love what you're doing, contributions that you're making, and to be on your show is just an honor. So here's my last thing I would just say, and it's an invitation to our listeners and our viewers. Think about a person in your life who believed in you. Maybe they believed in you more than you believed in yourself, who had confidence in you, maybe more confidence than you had. Someone who took a chance on you, maybe gave you an opportunity, maybe you didn't feel ready. They said, no, you are ready. You got this. And I got your back. Someone who trusted and inspired you. This could be anyone. It could be someone at work, a mentor, a coach, a leader, a boss, a friend, a colleague. It could be someone in your personal life, parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, family member, a friend, a neighbor, someone in the community, someone in your service group, someone in your church group, someone in athletics, a coach, a teacher, a leader at school, but someone who believed in you, had confidence in you, took a chance on you, who trusted and inspired you. I ask you to reflect upon such a person. I think we've all had at least one, if you think long enough. So think about that. What did that do to you when you felt that kind of belief in you? How did you respond? How did you see yourself differently as a result of their belief in you? And how has that impacted you and your growth and your life to this day? So reflect upon that. Maybe consider thanking this person. They're still living. You'll be amazed at what that does to them. If they passed on, think a family member. And then here's the invitation. So that's the first half. Think of a trusted by a person in your life and what that did for you. Thank them if you can. And then pay it forward. Ask yourself this question. To whom could I become this kind of leader, mentor, person for another, just like someone has been for me? So who in your personal, family, or professional life would be most influenced, most impacted by being more trusted and inspired by you, listener or viewer? Reflect upon that. Pick one relationship you'd love to transform and become that trust-inspired person for that individual, just like someone has been for you. That's my invitation. And if you can do it with one, you can do it with another.
Well, Stephen, I would have to say this has been... I've been doing this for a long time, learn it and everything. And we come across so many wonderful people, but this is one of my favorite conversations we've had, and part of it is not even the words you're saying, but the way you're saying them. and how much you believe in it and how much you believe that I know, like Darren and I do, that the work we do at Learn It is to help make people better, both professionally, personally, and to help build better leaders for the future, which I think we all want to set out to do.
Thank you, Damon. That's very meaningful to me. I appreciate that. I've also loved this conversation with the two of you. And I feel like we're kindred spirits.
We are. I mean, this is awesome. Besides buying your book, where else can our listeners connect with you at?
Yeah. Connect with me on LinkedIn. You can follow me and connect with me there, Stephen M. R. Covey. Connect with me on Twitter, at Stephen M. R. Covey, on Instagram. And you know, those are the two socials I use the most. X, I guess it's X now. X and Instagram, as well as LinkedIn. Those three are the ones I tend to use the most. And through there, you can connect with me and love to be an influence any way I can in your world, your life, for good.
Well, thank you, Stephen. And so the book, if I got my copy here, Trust and Inspire. Now, my sales team might not like this, but for our listeners out there, if you go out and buy Stephen's book and you text me a picture or just send me a message on either my email or on LinkedIn, I'll give you a free Learn It class, a free $250 class. So go buy Stephen's book, read it. You're going to love it. And what a wonderful conversation. And until next time, stay curious and keep learning. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Damon. Thank you, Stephen. Darren. Thank you, everyone.